Good afternoon, good morning, good evening, wherever you are. My name is Dirk Pilat. I'm the Director of Professional Development at the RCGP and a GP in Northeast Essex. Thanks for switching on your device. And today we're going to talk about the new immunization contract for England in 21-22. Now, I have to say that this is not a subject matter that I have been particularly well read on, but I have my friend George Cassianos with me, who does actually specialize in this particular topic. And George thought it was really, really important that we get the message out that there is a new contract on vaccinations for NHS England. So we're going to talk a little about that, what the new contract means, what it means for general practice, for all our teams. And I'm going to let him introduce himself. George, say hi to the community.
Oh, hi, everybody. I'm George Cassianos. I'm a retired GP from active practice, but I'm very much involved in immunizations with the Royal College of GPs, but also with other organizations in the UK, Europe, and abroad.
George, you've been engaged in this topic now for a long time. Why are you so enthusiastic about vaccinations and immunizations?
Well, Dirk, I'm very interested in anything that keeps our patients healthy and reduces illness and death. Vaccinations have such a great impact on achieving just that. And in my professional life, I always remember the thoughts of Louis Pasteur, who said that when meditating over a disease, I never think of finding a remedy for it, but instead a means of preventing it.
And that was so many years ago. But I think that the UK is actually doing pretty well on all fronts of vaccinations, aren't we?
Generally, I can say yes, if you compare us with other countries. We deliver vaccination services across all primary care through GP practices, community pharmacies, and of course, school health services. But the truth is, during the last few years, we have not always been having high enough coverage to prevent onward transmission of infections. The best example I can give you is measles. In 2019, the UK lost its World Health Organization measles-free status. This was due to the increasing number of cases that resulted from the falling coverage rates we saw for MMR during 2018 and 2019.
So we need to work harder to get our patients to attend for vaccinations, and we need to work harder to get our parents bring their children to vaccinations, don't we?
Yes, but we also need to look at the service we give to our patients. Take as an example the survey the Royal Society of Public Health did in 2018, published under the title Moving the Needle. When parents, working age adults, and older adults were asked what barriers were there to accessing vaccination, what do you think was the answer?
Well, I presume they forget.
That's exactly the answer the healthcare professionals gave. The patients did not agree with us. Availability of appointments was their number one reason for not getting vaccinated, or their children are getting vaccinated, followed by the timing and location of appointments.
So maybe the whole vaccination thing is sometimes just too complex, and a number of occasions we're just not getting the incentive right. Isn't there, as an inner city practice, if you only achieve 65% of vaccination rate for your kids in their first year of life, so that's 5% short of getting that important 70, that means they're not going to get the money they would expect, is it?
And they would have needed to achieve 90% before they could get the full payment.
Aha. So I presume that the new contract has changed that. So there are better incentives and hopefully an answer to these previous anomalies?
Yes, it does all that and more. It reduces complexities, remunerates our efforts, improves the value and impact of vaccinations in general practice. The new GP contract in England not only encourages us to vaccinate, but rewards us further when we achieve high vaccination rates, which in turn protects our health by reducing the circulation of infectious disease in our communities. It aims also to reduce variations in vaccination rates and inequalities, while it always seeks to improve personalization of care and patient experience, as well as reduce complexities in practice. It is a win-win contract, in my view.
Okay, so you need to convince me, obviously. So I believe the contract has been in place since the 1st of April for this financial year, that's 21-22. So if I remember this right, there is the direct enhanced service, the DES. So what has happened to the childhood immunization DES?
Well, the provision of vaccination immunization services is now an essential service, and this now covers all routine NHS-funded vaccinations. There are two exceptions, of course. There are the childhood and other seasonal influenza vaccination, and also the COVID-19 vaccination, which will remain to be delivered as an enhanced service.
Okay, so it's an essential service. So what changes?
The 70 and 90% vaccination rate for payment has been abolished. The fundamental change is that there is now a single item of service fee for all doses delivered in all vaccination programs that are funded through the GMS contract.
Okay, but okay, that makes sense. But what about the situation when we need to give, you know, additional doses of vaccination to meet clinical needs, such as additional dose of Hep B, when to be given to neonates born to hepatitis B positive mothers, or when we vaccinate pregnant women with pertussis?
All those cases you describe attract the basic item of service fee. Also, cases where children are vaccinated outside the routine schedule, for example, if we are completing immunizations for a child that has arrived from abroad, also, if we give the HPV to boys and girls aged between 14 and 25 years, the meningococcal meningitis to children aged 14 to 25 years, or diphtheria, tetanus, and polio to those aged 12 to 13 years, as long as they have not been vaccinated under the school's program.
Okay, so that's good. So what's the fee that is suggested at the moment?
For this year and the next 2 years, the fee is fixed to £10.06 for each vaccine we give to babies and adults, as long as it is part of the NHS vaccination schedule. Remember, we can claim an item of service payment for all listed NHS-funded vaccines, even when multiple vaccines are administered in a single appointment. The claim should be, of course, submitted as usual within 6 months of administering their vaccination.
So what about patients who want to have the vaccination but physically not able to attend their local practice?
Oh, the regulations say that the practice must make all reasonable efforts to ensure the patient is vaccinated. I'm afraid there is no provision as regards to a home visit.
Okay. Let's discuss QOF, Quality and Outcomes Framework. So if I remember correctly, we have been told that in order to provide stability and support recovery, QOF for 21-22 will be based upon the indicators set already agreed for the previous year, 2021, with very limited changes only, but one main exception, vaccinations and immunizations. So that has changed in the QOF.
Well, that's right. It has changed in the new contract. The changes involve the four influenza domains, which are now retired, but income, another four domains, three of which are around children's vaccinations, and the fourth is for shingles vaccination. With them, almost £60 million is transferred from the All Vaccination Directed Enhanced Service to QOF 2021-22.
Okay, and I understand the numeric value for each point in QOF is also increased. It's now £201.16, and the national average practice population is now 9,085. So what do we need to get our QOF points for vaccinations?
Well, the first three QOF domains in vaccinations concern young children. The first domain is around the percentage of babies who, before they reach the age of 8 months, they have received 3 doses of the hexavalent vaccine. In fact, the domain mentions specifically diphtheria, tetanus, and pertussis. At 90% vaccination rate, we receive 3 points, while at 95%, it's 18 points. You can see here the incentive to achieve at least 95% vaccination rate. The second domain looks at the percentage of children who reach 18 months old in the preceding 12 months. It is dedicated to the first MMR dose, which a child should have received between the ages of 12 and 18 months. At 90%, we receive 7 points, while at 95%, it's 18 points. And of course, 95% is the level at which we can stop the measles virus circulating in our communities.
So there's the incentive to do really, really well when it comes to immunization. What happens if the first MMR dose was given before the child is 12 months of age? This is by no means that unusual, as some parents are worried that their children may contract measles because of decreasing herd immunity and may have their children vaccinated well before their first birthday. What does the rule say?
A dose of the MMR given before the child's first birthday does not count. Mm-hmm. The MMR should be given once the child is 12 months of age, unless instructed by public health to give it early. For example, in case of a measles outbreak or the risk of measles is high. And even then, the dose is repeated later when the child is over 1 year of age. The reason why the MMR vaccine is not routinely given before the child is one is because residual maternal antibodies may just reduce the response of the vaccine.
Mm-hmm. So this is perhaps maybe a compromise between the risk of measles infection and the level of protection we can get. So what's the third domain?
The third domain concerns the first and second MMR dose. So the MMR one really plays a double role here. Both doses should have been given between the ages of 1 and 5 years, as well as the preschool diphtheria, tetanus, acellular pertussis, polio, that should have been given in the preceding 12 months to a child now reaching the age of 5 years. At 87%, we receive 7 points, while at 95%, it's 18 points.
Gosh, I can see lots of practice managers already wrinkling their brows about this. What about adult routine vaccinations such as pneumococcal and shingles vaccination?
They both attract the item of service fee of £10.06. And in addition, shingles gain a domain in QOF.
Aha, and that hasn't been there before.
Well, no. And this is actually totally new. And this is the fourth QOF domain, which is the percentage of patients who reach 80 years old in the preceding 12 months who have received a shingles vaccine between the ages of 70 and 79 years. A vaccination rate up to 50% will get us no points. But once we achieve over 50%, we start gaining points. And at 60%, we achieve the maximum 10 points. At the age of 70, we call patients, while from 71 to 79 is opportunistic or on request.
So more incentives, and now for the shingles vaccination, but why this large gap, 70 to less than 80 years of age?
Well, for two main reasons. Previously, we were vaccinating 70 to 77 years old, when in every successive year, we were going up by 1 year, while the 78 to less than 80 year olds were our catch-up cohort. Now, all ages are put together in one cohort, 70 to less than 80 years of age. The second reason is to encourage us to vaccinate our target patients as early as possible, because the earlier we vaccinate our patients in this target group, the better response from the live attenuated vaccine we currently use. This is because of the effect of immunosenescence, which in simple terms is the immunological situation where we respond less to vaccines as we get older. So the earlier we give it, the better. Immunologically, the best results we get if we vaccinate at 70 years of age.
I have a feeling that my practice manager is not only going to raise an eyebrow, but it looks like this all means there will be more work for the community of practice managers.
Yes, definitely, as the contract also introduces 5 core standards to support the delivery and organization of vaccination immunization services. It is a good idea to go through these core standards.
Goodness, yes, go on, please.
Well, the important thing to do is to identify in each practice a name lead for vaccination and immunization. And this is the first core standard. This person has to be a driver. And if not a clinician, they must work alongside to be supported by a clinician to ensure that the core standards are met. The lead's responsibilities are to oversee these services, ensure the core standards are being met, and that opportunities for vaccination are maximized within the practice. Further, the lead will need to work closely, not only with others within their practice, but also the primary care network, NHS England Public Health Commissioning, Child Health Information Services, school-age vaccination services, and local authority public health colleagues who, as you know, work with health visitors and school nursing teams so that they can understand the practice current performance and where this can be improved, if required, of course.
So this is really an important position within the practice, isn't it?
Yes, very important. The lead will be responsible for overseeing the 5 core standards.
Okay, so what's the next core standard?
Well, the second core standard is around the availability of sufficiently trained staff and convenient appointments to cover 100% of their eligible population. Not only that, but the appointments should be acceptable and convenient to the practice population. The practice may wish to organize vaccination services within the primary care network during extended hours, evenings, weekends, as the practice needs to provide maximum flexibility for working adults and parents. We are required to ensure patients can book appointments online, and these should be integrated with other digital developments, such as the electronic red book and the NHS app. The third core standard is call and recall, as well as opportunistic delivery of vaccinations. We can invite patients as they become eligible for vaccination by letter, telephone call, or text, but ideally by the patient's preferred method of communication where this is known. For children, the initial contact should normally provide a pre-book appointment slot and should include information on how to change this if it's unsuitable. For patients that do not respond to the initial invitation, a minimum of 2 separate additional calls should be made. And in most cases, recall activity should continue beyond these 3 contacts until vaccination is completed. This is most important for routine childhood vaccinations. Once 3 invitations have remained unanswered, this should be flagged on our records so that opportunities for opportunistic vaccination are maximized. In the case of children, we need to inform the childhood health information services and school age immunization teams.
That is quite an undertaking for the practices.
Indeed, it really aims to ensure comprehensive and high vaccination rates.
And I hope with all these new organizational changes and the opportunities to book we give to patients, I can only hope that networks in this case can come to the fore. But there are more core standards. What's the fourth one?
Well, it is the participation in national agreed catch-up campaigns, which are time-limited programs, and they aim at unvaccinated cohort of eligible patients. This is now a core requirement for practices with funding provided through the global sum. If the campaign involves a vaccine that accrues an item of service fee, then this is payable against each dose of the vaccine we give.
You've lost me now. Can you explain that to me with giving me an example?
Here is one. Since 2019, We have been working on the MMR catch-up campaign for children aged 10 and 11 years. For each dose of the MMR vaccine delivered as a result of this catch-up activity, it will attract an item of service fee of £10.06. Now, the same applies to children aged 6 years and over that have not received a completed course of MMR vaccination. For children aged 6 years and over, and the 10 to 11 year olds catch up, the vaccination is opportunistic or if requested.
Okay, all right. I think there are more core standards coming, aren't there? What's the fifth one?
Well, the fifth core standard is around the very important record keeping and reporting. Practices must adhere to the standards of recording vaccine delivery for contract monitoring and payment purposes, of course. We need to record refusal of immunization, and where we vaccinate, we need to record the consent, batch number, expiry date, name of the vaccine, date of administration, any contraindications, any adverse reactions to the vaccine. And when two or more vaccines are administered in close succession, the route of administration and injection site of each vaccine.
Okay, that makes sense. But last year, due to increased hygiene standards in the population, we didn't have much issue with flu. But what's happening to influenza this year? If we have lost the four-quarter influenza domain, then what happens to influenza?
Well, seasonal influenza vaccination for children and adults, as well as COVID vaccination, continue to be enhanced services, but influenza is treated with some extra investment.
I presume that's good news. In what way then?
Well, the NHS wants general practice and community pharmacies to want to work closely with their primary care networks. Why? Because the NHS sees this cooperation as a way to maximize vaccine coverage and also minimize vaccine wastage. In addition, the NHS sees this as supporting the achievement on GP and pharmacist incentives within their respective contracts, of course. The primary care network coverage targets will be incentivized through the Investment and Impact Fund, the IIF.
Another new term I didn't know about. So can you give us some details about that?
Yes, there are three indicators, each for a different age of patients, different thresholds and different points and monetary value. For each cohort, we are looking as whether they received a seasonal influenza vaccination between 1st of September and 31st of March. The first indicator is patients aged 65 years and over. 40 points and £9 million have been allocated to this cohort, and the vaccination rates to reach are 80% and 85%. The second indicator is patients aged 18 to 64 years and in a clinical at-risk group. 88 points and £19.8 million have been allocated to this cohort, and the vaccination rates to reach are 57% and 90%. You have noticed here that the points and investment are double, as we need to get these patients, that is age 18 to 64, to come forward for vaccination. Last influenza season, we managed to achieve about 53% vaccination rate in this cohort. Compare this, of course, to 81% we achieved for the older adults. And there is a third indicator. Now, that is actually children aged 2 to 3 years. 14 points and £3.2 million have been allocated to this cohort, and the vaccination rates to reach are 45% and 82%.
That sounds like quite the challenge for primary care, but I'm sure that, as ever, we will rise to this. But I can see that this is not going to be a doddle to implement. But now, it's summer while we're recording this. people's thoughts are to faraway places where they might need travel vaccines to go. So where do travel vaccines appear in the new contract?
Well, travel vaccines, as well as pre- and post-prophylaxis vaccinations, are in the global sum, which means, in effect, and according to the contract, we have already been paid to do the work. In this case, the item of service fee of £10.06 does not apply. NHS patients, of course, can access all travel vaccines as well as a risk assessment and advice in private clinics too.
As far as I remember, not all travel vaccines are covered by the NHS. Can you just remind me, please, which travel vaccines we're talking about?
You're right. There are just four vaccines that are covered by the NHS for travelers abroad, but only when they're going to be at risk of infection in a particular country for the disease that a particular vaccine protects them from. In order to know whether a vaccine is indicated, look on the website of NATHNAC. These four NHS vaccines are hepatitis A, typhoid, polio, and cholera. The patient must not be asked to pay for these four vaccines as they are available to them on the NHS. But remember, NATHNAC must be recommending them for the individual country the NHS patient traveler is traveling to. If your patient is requesting the cholera vaccine for a visit to Germany, you'll find that NATHNAC does not indicate your patient will be at risk of cholera if they visit Germany. So it's not available on the NHS then.
Okay. Now, very embarrassingly, can you remind me what NATHNAC is?
Is the National Travel and Health Centre, which is actually the same as Travax in Scotland, but is for England.
Okay.
And of course, that's where we always go for advice.
Okay. Well, with all the flooding in Germany, I wouldn't be surprised if very soon we might have to need have cholera for yes. For parts of Germany. So when should the NHS patient who wants to travel away pay for travel vaccines?
When they agree to receive a vaccine for which the NHS does not pay us a fee to vaccinate them. In this case, the practice can charge their NHS patient the cost of the vaccine and administration. Here's an example to illustrate this. You see the parents and their 15-year-old son. NATHNAC advises that for their destination, the meningitis vaccine, MenACWY, is indicated. You cancel them, and then they receive the vaccine. The parents are charged a fee for the cost of the vaccine and administration, while for the son, you claim the NHS item of service fee of £10.06 because the young man missed this vaccine at school.
Okay, that makes sense. So what happens, which is probably a typical Friday afternoon story, patient goes abroad, is bitten by a dog or a monkey, and flies straight back home and comes to see you at Friday at 6 o'clock.
In this case, public health will guide the GP as to whether the patient needs to receive rabies immunoglobulin and also how many doses of the vaccine they will need, as this depends on whether they have been fully immunized or not before they travel. Public health will supply what is needed, but it is now our responsibility to immunize the patient. As for a fee, this we will find it is covered in the global sum.
Okay, so what about if in my area, here up here in Northeast Essex, there is suddenly a significant outbreak of a vaccine-preventable infectious disease?
Well, the management of a significant outbreak of infectious disease is the responsibility of your local commissioners, the CCG, and is not included in your global sum. They will negotiate with you what is needed to be done and will finance it.
Finally, I think, George, can you clarify when we can actually claim reimbursements for a vaccine?
The general rule is that we cannot claim reimbursement for a vaccine that is centrally supplied. Please note that these now include the polysaccharide pneumococcal vaccine, PBV23. Also, any travel vaccine for which the patient has paid us a fee for the cost of the vaccine and administration. In the previous example I gave you, The parents paid for the vaccine cost, but in the case of the 15-year-old son, you can claim for the NHS reimbursement of his vaccine.
Well, I have to admit that my head is spinning a little bit now after this, and because I'm not a specialist in immunizations, vaccinations, and you are, could you do me a favor? Just tell me, is this new contract a good thing?
I think this new contract for vaccinations, immunizations for general practice in England is very good because it remunerates us for the work we're doing. While before, we were not always remunerated. And in addition to that, incentivizes us to do more, to vaccinate more. And if we vaccinate more, we actually protect our population from infectious disease.
Well, I think we can finish at this. And I hope that everybody out there has now had a little bit of an insight into the new contract. I'm sure there'll be still at times some raised eyebrows on how to implement that. But fortunately, we've got an amazing community of practice managers who are going to help us with that. George, thank you very much for your time. This has been extremely enlightening. And thank you, everybody, for listening. Remember, vaccinations save lives. Have a wonderful day wherever you are, and have a safe winter. Thank you very much.